I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Ever found yourself spiraling down the fascinating rabbit hole of trend and start wondering if there is some sort of wizard tracking it all? Today, we are unraveling that enigma with none other than Kevin Alaka, the maestro of trends steering the ship at the intersection of culture and innovation at YouTube. Kevin, a connoisseur of trends with a dash of professional nerd, self-titled, of course, has feasted his eyes on more YouTube spectacles than any mortal ever dared. With a book under his belt, illuminating the eclectic world of YouTube trends and their seismic ripples through our global culture, Kevin is about to spill all the secrets on how creators are not just witnesses, but pivotal architects in this exhilarating era of technological renaissance. Sit back and enjoy the ride.
I'm very proud of what you're doing.
Smile for 15 seconds out a day and make the world a better place.
Welcome to Everything is Better with Creators, brought to you by Whaler. Join us as we dive into the latest trends, news, and strategies shaping the creator economy and learn how it's driving innovation and change.
Here we go. Oh my goodness. Kevin Alaka is here. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Ashley.
Welcome to Everything is Better with Creators. I am absolutely thrilled that you're here. When I saw your name come across my calendar, I said, hold on, this is going to be big. Because, come on, culture and trends. You've watched them for, I mean, come on. You're the culture and trends captain.
It's true. It's true. I'm the captain of the made up jobs club, you know?
And I also love that part of your bio as well. So, I mean, let's start there. I would love for you to break down your origin story here and talk about your journey from being a writer and editor. And now, like, you're pioneering this YouTube cultural and trends function at Google. Like, let's talk about this.
When I first entered the workforce, I guess, post college, I wanted to be a comedy writer, and I worked as a comedy writer for a bit at the Huffington Post, and was there for a couple of years doing political satire stuff. And then I was a journalist briefly at a company called Media Bistro, where I used to report in the television news industry. And around 2010, there was an initiative at YouTube to basically legitimize the platform by getting more YouTube videos on TV news programs. Like, that was the idea.
Wow.
TV news producers were kind of seeing that there was this emerging pop culture that was happening online, right? Viral videos. This is like your double rainbow era of like internet stuff, you know?
Yes.
And so everybody's like, oh, these videos are so cool, but we don't know how to find them. Like, we'd love to like talk about the double rainbow video on the Today Show, but like no one knows how to find those things when they're popping up. And so YouTube was like, okay, well, we can help with that. So they basically, I joined the company to launch this thing called YouTube Trends, which was to help journalists understand what was trending on the platform. And it turned out very quickly that there were all these other applications. Once you build the systems to be able to understand and explain and contextualize what's happening on the platform, there's lots of different ways that you can use that. And so today, 13 years later, the work I do is very different, but it is still grounded in that basic idea of how do we understand how people are using this technology and how do we help other people understand what's happening on the platform. So understanding not only just for us what's popular, but for helping everyone else understand what's popular on the platform for lots of different reasons.
This is fascinating. Okay, like this initial need also paired so beautifully with like the comedy background, because I mean at the end of the day, like we all know, like that the roots of comedy is what's happening now in culture, what's like what's relevant to the audience. So I'm seeing a lot of synergy going on here. And so again, did it feel like fish out of water in terms of like it being such a basis into digital media and cultural analysis, or did you feel like this was just like from a journalism writing by like this just it all felt the same to you?
Oh no, I like the experience of being basically an editorial person at Google in 2010. It was like, oh, I'm the only person here who like this is my experience. Definitely. I mean, even when I left my job, I was like, hey guys, I put in my 2 weeks. I was like, I'm taking a job at Google. I was like, what? What are you doing there? You know? And so, I mean, even still today, like I feel like I'm much more comfortable in this unique area that I've carved out. But it is, it's an unusual discipline and thing because it had never really existed before. And, you know, I was just talking to my team this week about it, that, you know, all of them have jobs that no one was ever in before. They invented their jobs, essentially. You know, they were the first person hired into their role. So they've kind of made them what they are today. So it was an uncomfortable, weird experience in some ways, because, you know, I don't know how to code, you know, I'm not like a software engineer or anything like that. And the company is, it's a tech company, but at the same time, I've carved out my world, you know.
Your tenacity, your grit, and being able to like lean into something that's uncomfortable, defining something new. Trying to measure success, all these things. I mean, I'm sure that, again, at the end of the day, you're always trying to seek out like how to add value. And so like, again, when you're in a new role like this, I'm just curious to see like what was like the first aha moment where you were like, whoa, this is actually really massive. And this there's more than just the journalism moment. Like how did it expand and explode?
Even before I got into comedy or anything like that, I was always really obsessed with and interested in why entertainment works the way that it does. You know, I studied communication in college. I wrote a thesis about stand-up comedians. Like I was always interested in like, why does this joke work? Like, why does this thing work the way that it does? And so a lot of that curiosity was a major driver in how I approached sort of the beginnings of the role that I have this company now, which is trying to just grounding it in, well, why does this exist the way it is? And taking a very empathetic, I suppose, view of entertainment, which is to say, like, no value judgments here. Like, if people like stuff, why? You know, I don't need to say whether it's good or bad they like those things. And in the entertainment world, like, YouTube sits at this weird, especially at that time, sat at this kind of intersection point of traditional entertainment and the entertainment industry and the technology industry. And no one in either of those two camps at the time really like fully understood. There was a small group of people who really understood the intersection between those things. And, you know, we'd have these conversations all the time about, you know, oh, God, that thing that's so popular. Why is it? Even internally, people couldn't understand why things were the way that they were. But I was finding all of these things that I just became fascinated by very, very quickly. I mean, I remember being a month or two in and seeing all of these very popular Minecraft videos and just thinking like, why is this? Why does this exist as a thing? And like spending time trying to unpack it. And like, I don't play Minecraft or anything, but I understand it now to this day. And now last year we did this huge whole thing about how it crossed 1 trillion views and stuff. And it was just, you could see early on even that these phenomena that people were dismissing were actually becoming a major part of pop culture for different demographics. And now today, a lot of what we think of as entertainment culture was forged in that time by people who are playing in those spaces.
I mean, my jaw's on the ground right now, just even understanding and thinking about all of that. I mean, the fact that you were just talking about the threshold of talking about trillion, I mean, the volume here is massive that you've consumed. I mean, we're going to have to double click into this, the intersectionality of, you know, traditional media and where YouTube sits now for sure. I know that wasn't on the questionnaire, but we're going to have to go there. We have to.
Let's do it.
So let's talk about, I'm going to softball it for now and just say, again, we're talking about trillions. We're talking about such a high volume of content that you've consumed. Like, please tell me that there's a standout that you have, that's something that is living rent-free in your mind. Best hack, most fun, like, what is it?
This week, the hack of the week in my life is America's Test Kitchen channel has a cooking thing called Technically. Basically, I turn out is I've been using my microwave wrong this whole time. And it's like one of those things where you're like, oh my God, I just didn't even know I should be using that setting on my microwave. It changes how the whole thing worked. But there's a lot of that stuff that comes up over the years that you see that, you know, sticks with you. But it's funny, you know, I mentioned Double Rainbow before as a thing. But, you know, people often ask, like, do I have a favorite YouTube video or what's the thing I return to? And that video is always the one. It's like the perfect, in a way, YouTube video. And it is because, I don't know if you remember it, but it's Bear Vasquez, who's like out in his yard, sees a double rainbow for the first time. He's having this like crazy emotional experience to it. And he would often say that it wasn't him seeing the rainbow. It was you were seeing the rainbow through him. And like, it was like his perspective that made that video what it is. You could barely actually even see the rainbow in the video. It doesn't matter. It is all about his reaction. And so in a way you actually are more authentically experiencing that moment because of him than you are by watching the image itself. And I think that idea of like a person who has this unique point of view, and Bear certainly was a unique individual with a very unique perspective on life, capturing something that then the rest of the world has a response to, or people all around the world react to, like that is kind of web video at its best from my perspective. And so that video always sticks with me.
I love that. I love that example for sure. Because as soon as you said that, I mean, I remember the place and time, and also like, you know, clutching my chest, almost like a Hallmark moment of being like, wow, like I feel him. Like I feel that. I mean, how precious is he? Again, also how incredible are rainbows? We're all contemplating all these things that we hadn't discussed before, which again, does make it such a cool cultural conversation at the moment. And so, you know, I would love to hear again, now that you are well established, fast forward, it's 2023 now. How are you actually defining culture? And like, what is that definition or the filters that things have to go through to actually even be considered by you and your team?
Yeah, I mean, it's so complicated now. And just we have a whole generation of people who grew up making things online. It's become a lot more self-referential. It means that a lot of the means with which we would analyze things changes over time. You have different formats now, live streams, short form, long form. How topics and the way that those topics are articulated across those different formats can vary. So, I mean, as a group, we've made a couple of decisions over the years that I think have shaped kind of how we are. We don't really do a lot of vertical specific analysis because it's become so hard to, I mean, the music is its own thing and stuff, but genre becomes incredibly blurry on YouTube and maybe doesn't even matter. And we don't think about things that way, but we do think, you know, my team's spread out all over the world. We have people covering 13 different markets or, you know, locales for us, which includes some regions like MENA, Middle East and North Africa, and countries like, you know, France and stuff. And so we look at things very much through the lens of cultures and the people who are experiencing them, right? So we look at content in these different markets and things. And I'd say like over the years, we used to look a lot at like individual videos, what videos are popping, and then it became what creators are popping. And now it's a lot more about topics and conversations and things. So that sort of changed over time. But we analyze these things from a lot of different perspectives, and we also now we run surveys with companies like Ipsos to validate some of these hypotheses of things that we're seeing, because you kind of have to look at this stuff from lots of different angles.
I love that there is this, you know, truly organic way that you're going about it. And then also I think, how amazing is it that all of this has evolved to these communities? Like the communities are now the creator, these fandoms are now their own entity in which that are shifting and like directing conversation that are just as powerful as the creator themselves. And I think that's just like super interesting, because when I was reading your culture and trend report, you talk about like all these all these different hierarchies of fandom. I'd love for you to like chat about that for a bit. And like, what are you seeing? And like, what's like the most captivating thing that you're seeing happening in that space?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea, even though I think we've all perceived this happening now, like it's become a much more common experience of watching content from other quote unquote fans, is a much more common part of the pop culture experience. 47% of Gen Z that we surveyed this is across 16 different countries that we run these surveys in, responded that they've watched videos made by fans of specific content or artists in the past 12 months. So it's like almost half your Gen Z demographic. 54% of the people that we surveyed across basically Gen Z's millennials agree that they would prefer to watch creators breaking down a major event than the event itself. So even the lens that we seek to view a lot of moments now is actually through the lens of creators and therefore the communities that they are a part of, which again speaks to this fandom thing. And about 60% of Gen Z that we surveyed said they would describe themselves as a really big or super fan of someone or something. So like the fandom thing has become a much more common sort of part of how we think about entertainment, and content that is created out of the fandom is like part of the entertainment experience within that, in that group. And people don't consider themselves like part of fandoms and things, but everybody or most people have some example of this. Even you could argue, you know, major tech reviewers, you look at Marques Brownlee, like that is a fan community of people who are into technology, and he is the king of that thing. But it is content about other things in a way. And we're in this world where the conversations that we have about content have become content and become culture. That is a sort of a different way of thinking about entertainment than was really possible previously.
For sure. I know that, you know, with the work that we're doing here at Whaler and we're working with a brand partner, that is like one of our quintessential like keys of like, this is when you know you've made it, is when you make it into meme culture, or people are, you know, wanting to remix and do other things with your content for it to become a larger conversation. That is like one of our markers of success for sure. And again, I'm just so glad to see that in here and that it's being recognized, because it is huge. It's like that this way that people are able to create content is, it's just beyond, like it's at scale and people are just doing it on a whim.
Well, I think fandom's been interesting for us to examine lately, because it's an interesting intersection point between this phenomenon of popular culture becoming more personalized and the existence of shared cultural experiences, which definitely still exist, right? It's like, it's not like they don't exist. There's no shared culture anymore. That's not the case. But we also know that personalization is playing a much bigger role in how we think about entertainment and culture today. When you ask people about their preferences and the content they watch, people are watching content that other people they know don't know about. You know, they're watching artists that no one they know are interested in. That's a much more common phenomenon now than it was previously. But you also like certainly have shared experience things that are happening online, whether that's a trend that's born online or, you know, massive movies and things like that. So it's interesting to see those things kind of, you know, intersecting with one another in this fandom place.
For sure. I mean, subculture and people's secret interests along with, you know, pop culture. Again, the whole thing is just so yummy and delicious to just like have. I'm like, let's just talk about this all the time, because there's so much to talk about here. But I would like to talk to you about the customization piece and, like you were saying, personal interest piece, and how, and now we can like get into this whole like evolution between traditional media and what's being provided on your platform, and why we're seeing such high volume of consumption of people who just can't get enough of it. So, I mean, do you really feel like we are at the dawn of TVC going bye-bye? I would love to hear your hot take on that.
I'm not great at predictions, and I'll tell. And it's funny, but given my job, but it's like I'm really resistant to predicting things, and I think it's because it's so hard to understand what's happening right now that the idea of then also predicting what's going to happen in the future, there's just so many variables. It's a naturally chaotic system, so it's really hard, I think, to predict these things. And a lot of people who do make these predictions, like, I don't know, I have a lot of suspicions about certain things, but, you know, I think when you look at what's happening today, certainly, it's not like we don't have breakthrough entertainment that exists. And I think that will still continue to exist. What it looks like and what it feels like is just becoming more diversified. And I think that that's the natural reality. I think the introduction of multi-format consumption, or, you know, what we think of as people watching content across different formats, is also changing these environments. Again, it's another way to think about personalization, because the format that you watch something is often tied to the personal context in any given moment, right? Like, oh, you want to flip through some stuff, so you watch the short form things. You want to put something on your TV. You know, we know the connected TV consumption of online content's exploded. Like, that's a nice to watch a long form thing. You know, you're going to watch a live stream. Like, these are all kind of contextual, and it comes down to the individual user's experience. And then you see what a lot of the creators that are growing the fastest right now are the ones that are playing across these different formats. You know, we look at the top creators that are seeing the most growth, and that is the one common thing that is clear across all of them on YouTube, is that they're playing across different formats. And so I think this challenges our notion of what entertainment looks like, feels like, you know, from mass media context. But I feel like that's been playing out for the last, you know, decade or so for sure. And I think the pandemic really accelerated some of these things.
Absolutely. I mean, if you all didn't pick up that gem that Kevin just dropped on us, I mean, I'm loving that you did Seek, and it is about a multi-platform play, and really spreading it all out there and being wherever things can be watched and having something available on every platform. There's something to be really, really said about that for sure.
Hey, hang tight. We're not going anywhere. Our Everything is Better with Creators podcast will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
If you were going to give someone advice who wants to go on YouTube today, like what do you feel like is the biggest and most important thing that someone should know about from a creator perspective, getting on your platform?
Yeah, well, the first thing you should know, and people, if you are a creator and you're watching this, you know this all too well, is that the word creator is deceiving because the act of creation is only one part of the job. You know, the part of the job description about audience development and business development and stuff that's not mentioned in the name, you know, these are the realities. And so I bring this up to say, like, if you're entering this world today, the single simplest sort of advice that I have is that you need to find the intersection of a thing that you're really passionate about that you want to spend a lot of time thinking about and your own unique personality and what you can bring to that conversation. Like those two things are so essential. And then everything else is optimization beyond that. You know, everything else becomes about, okay, how do I figure out the tricks and the hacks and how I get my thumbnails right? And what's the right, you know, the right titling conventions or what's the stuff that like people are responding to? How do I experiment with different formats? But like the foundational thing of like, what's the thing that I care about that I want to share and what is my unique take on that thing? That's really hard. That's the foundational act in a way. That's the foundational thing. And that will evolve over time, of course. But it's not a thing you just jump into and you're like, I want to make stuff. And then we go. It doesn't quite work that way. And it's interesting when you look at a lot of younger creators who grown up with the technology. Everybody's making stuff now across ages. People are way more comfortable on camera, et cetera. So the thing that separates out a lot of them is that hunger to like understand all the other little pieces of things and be a part of conversations and building connections between things and experimenting. I mean, Mr. Beast is obviously the biggest creator in the world right now. And his whole MO is to experiment. Everything he puts out is an experiment in something. And he's constantly trying new things. I mean, he's not, you know, a comedian in a traditional context. You know, it's funny when you think about it in a traditional lens, like and go back to the genre conversation, like what genre is Mr. Beast? Like what's his core talent. It's like making content that people connect with. It's like, it's his thing. And that is the core skill. So anyway, that's my rant about it.
I think, again, those are things that I think that it always seems so easy at first. But like you said, like, this is really about this longevity of curiosity and how invested are you in this topic? Like, I mean, of course, anyone can just post and ghost, but you're right. To truly be a creator, there's something so much larger there outside of the edit. But I have to give you all a lot of credit because the edit, you all made it a lot easier. I mean, I'm actually in awe of what YouTube has done in terms of you all yourselves lowering the barrier of entry onto your platform, because for a while there, YouTube was like this, like, ooh, that's for like the pro.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's going to be like, we're going to have to like, watch some YouTube to get our editing skills together to get on YouTube. So, I mean, the evolution, like, talk to me about that and how, like, the thought process on making things easier and the foray into podcasting and short form and all these things with shorts. I would just love to hear some of your thoughts on the evolution of where you all are now and, like, any teasers you can have about where you're also thinking.
Well, there's always this interesting question of, do the features define the content or does the content define the features? And, you know, there's some obviously like a relationship between the two, right? Because the features define the constraints that then people bring their creativity to. But a lot of what you see on YouTube, a lot of the features you see on YouTube are things that are built out of and things that people want to do or are trying to do already. And people were already making. I remember the day when someone said to me, you know, I think YouTube might be the biggest podcasting platform in the world. And it's like, oh yeah, I guess that's true. Like, you know, if you just think about it, like it's, you don't think about it like a podcasting platform, but maybe that's true. This is, you know, I don't know how legitimate the stat was, but it's just like conceptually, right? Then now it's like, we have all these podcasting features to make that easier because people are already doing it on the platform. And I think all the creation stuff is tied to that too. I mean, I would say that part of what defines this particular era of entertainment is that the act of creating video is a pop culture experience in and of itself. More and more people want to participate in a trend, not to get seen or to build audience or to grow their whatever, but just to be a part of a thing and to make something. And the filters that you see on all these apps are playing into that. In the surveys that we ran, 65% of Gen Z have used a filter or feature or effect on a video app in the past year. 41% of Gen Z describe themselves as video content creators. You know, so the act of making and manipulating these tools is a pop culture experience in and of itself, independent of the content that is produced outside of that. And so I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've built is to make it easier for people to do the things they're already trying to do. And that's always been the MO, or to make it easier to earn a living and to be successful doing the things that people want to do. Rather than trying to say, okay, here's the future of whatever, you know, at any given moment. But of course, we're having this conversation in a very interesting moment as we're all observing this change in media around generative AI.
I mean, come on. That part alone is, I mean, the tidal wave of things around that topic alone have been wild. And for creators, I mean, I would love just to get some more, have you double click into that piece of it, you know, this VTuber situation, how it's, you know, sparking so much creativity, how it is, you know, taking away some of the bandwidth weight off of the creation process itself. Like, I would love to hear what your take is on that. And what are you seeing and what are you excited about in terms of AI?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be concerned about and excited about with all of these things, of course. I think we are right to have a skepticism about some of it. But when you look at what creators are doing with it today, there's some interesting stuff that's happening. I mean, that we've been watching. One is, there are a lot of videos that are employing AI-based tools that you don't even know, because it's just helping with the edit or helping with this, you know, the script, or it's helping with the graphics and things which are expensive parts of the process, right, for a creator. So there's what I would say is like optimization stuff, that creative optimization that happens with some of these things. It's like step one, and then you get into this other space of people kind of, you know, starting to play with the actual generative AI tools as a way to express themselves, and things get interesting there, because what you're essentially enabling is for people to conceive of and create and realize complex creative visions with a high level of fidelity and a high level of speed, right? So you could do it fast, and you could do it in a manner that feels professional very quickly. And what that means theoretically, right, my hypothesis is that what you should end up with is a much more diverse outcome, right? Because you have more people with more perspectives who have access to be able to create more elaborate things and to realize more complex things. And so, you know, while of course we're going to see a high volume of just garbage, of course, because anytime you can make things more easily, there's a lot more garbage that comes with it. You're also going to see a lot more people who have access to express themselves. And I don't know, I think that will be really interesting to watch, as we should have access to more voices and perspectives because of it. That's the optimistic point of view on a lot of these things. And then like the VTuber thing is like an interesting kind of, I don't know, tangential thing that's happened. For those that don't know, VTuber is short for virtual YouTuber. And it's part of this virtual influencer phenomenon that's been kind of ruminating, but has accelerated more quickly recently. And it's mostly coming out of Asia. Started first in Japan, but though we see there's a lot of YouTubers across Latin America and the US now, and South Korea, there's also a lot happening in this space. And, you know, I was curious, we ran some questions in the survey, and more than half of the people that we surveyed said that they watched a VTuber in the past year, and 61% of people agreed that they were open to watching content from virtual or animated influencers. And that what is something that it's confounding in a way, because you think about like authenticity being so key to digital expression. And we've been having a debate ourselves, like, and when I say that, I mean, me and my team, like, you know, is it more authentic if you can express yourself because in anonymously, you know, this is an interesting question. Certainly is the case in some cultures. So I don't know. I've been really fascinated by that whole area of creativity right now is people using digital avatars and things, what that will mean.
I mean, it's the whole thing is mind-boggling, captivating, it's all of the things. And same, I'm very interested in that space, especially with me looking out for creators' futures, you know, around IP. And there's just, again, there is quite the double-edged sword we're dealing with here, but it is captivating to watch and seeing how also the audience, how accepting the audience is or isn't, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, that particular stat that you read off, I was particularly like, okay, this is very interesting. This is a lot more fertile ground than I had anticipated. So again, very, very interesting. But I'm going to, because you see so much data, and I have to think about like your book, Videocracy, you know, the fact that it's exploring all these trends and that you are, again, like, and the impact that it's had on culture. Are you feeling like, is there a second book coming around the corner? Is there... I would just love to hear about anything that has been like top of mind for you that you've been like, whoa, I remember talking about this at one point and now I'm seeing this, or just anything that you found that's the most fascinating. I would love to hear your thoughts on, again, what continues to fascinate you or stand out to you.
Yeah. So there's a couple things that are, I've been very compelled by, I don't know if I'm writing a book about them, but things that I'm very compelled by right now, which is sort of how content and creativity spreads across geographies. And there's been a lot of interesting technology that's things that are not necessarily the most sexy like types of technologies that actually, I think, have had a meaningful impact in culture and will have a meaningful impact in culture. By that, I mean, I think the most prominent example of that, multi-language audio, right? The ability for people to upload multiple audio tracks in different languages. You combine that with some of the generative AI tools, and they already exist. You know, there's a very like early versions of this that exist where you can be a creator and you can just dub your video immediately. And you know, there's a educational creator in Brazil that I saw a video of who he just dubbed his video in English by, you know, using this AI tool that exists. It's not in his voice exactly; it doesn't quite get his intonation or anything. But that's a technology problem that I think will get solved. Mr. Beast puts out his videos now. He's got like 15 different audio tracks. Now, those are manually recorded because he has the budget to do that. But it's totally expanded his potential audience now, you know? So the ability for content and ideas to be able to spread more easily to different places because they're being basically unlocked by these technologies is really interesting. I mean, a little bit less of a dramatic thing shift, but captioning is another thing. Captions and subtitles, we think about that stuff as kind of accessibility tools, I guess, in a way. You'd put it in that category. But I just, as another survey question that I put in, just because I was curious about, was 60% of Gen Z agreed that they prefer to watch content online with subtitles and closed captions on. And 86% said that they'd watched content with closed captions or subtitles once a month or more. And so it's already happening that people are using these tools because maybe the context that they're in, it's too loud, they want to be able to watch, or the audio is mixed bad or whatever, you know. The New York Times just had a whole piece about subtitles as well in sort of longer form content. So I've been really intrigued by how what we think of as accessibility tools that allow the creator and the audience to more closely tailor the content to the viewer, right, to their experience and their accessibility level, what that could mean for entertainment in the future. It's the early days now, but it'll be interesting to watch.
I love that. I mean, again, like you said, such a simple application, but yes, if I can understand you in my mother tongue, of course, like that is so straightforward, but whoa, is that impactful, not only for the viewer, but also for the creator. I mean, come on. It's genius. It's a genius strategy alone. And I think all of us could like pay attention to that. And I'm also someone who watches content with the captions on just for, you know, so I can concentrate because my neurodivergence requires me to like lock in, and that helps me like really pay attention. No detail is lost when I have the captions on. So if I can have them, I want them. So I, again, that's like a game changer for me also that I think is like really, really special for sure.
I think a lot about, you know, when I used to get in the early, when we were talking earlier about my early years at YouTube, and I used to go and on morning shows and talk about things that were happening online and stuff. And there, a lot of the viral videos of that era, if you'll recall, were like kids and babies and, you know, like Charlie bit my finger type stuff and cats and pets stuff, you know? And part of the reason for that was that that content transcended language. If you could ask, if you could poll the whole world on things that they find at least moderately entertaining, it's like anthropomorphized animals and like kids doing funny stuff, you know? It's a universal thing. And so you have that content, which is because it was a global platform. It's the first time that we really were thinking about content truly globally in from an entertainment perspective outside of like some movies that have huge distribution. But today, you can be a lot more nuanced with that. And that model of, oh, it has to by its very nature be broadly accessible is not necessarily the case. I mean, obviously humor and culture and these things will always be specific. And so it's not like borders don't matter anymore or anything like that. But we're seeing a lot more people and diaspora communities having access to content has changed how trends spread around the world, you know?
For sure. I mean, and with that information, I mean, I would love to know what shifts are you seeing in demographics or in diversity? Because I mean, it's beyond just a demographic, but I would just love to know like from a cultural or geographical location standpoint, you know, are there some interesting shifts happening there? And how do you see like diversity evolving on the platform?
Yeah, it's a complicated question because actually diversity can be a difficult thing to measure in the way that we look at a lot of these things, you know? It gets you into some, I don't know, challenging questions about stuff. But if you just think about it from a global perspective, you know, certainly we're watching more and more content from different parts of the world. I mean, you look at what one of the most arguably popular, you know, music genres who have risen. You look at the two of the most popular music genres that are in the charts today that weren't before, you know, it's K-pop, it's like Latin music, it's regional Mexican music in the United States, you know? And so we're seeing this happen.
You're right. I mean, whoa, you explosion of that conversation happening.
Totally. In the survey that we ran, we found that 54% of people agree that they follow a creator who creates content in a language other than their own. So people are starting to consume more content from other places. Now, this is not that uncommon. They're not American, honestly. Like if you're French, you know, it's like you have a different perspective on this stuff because we export so much content. But in the US, it's uncommon. People aren't used to that as an idea.
True. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, now I'm like, I like these soap operas and all these things that are now dubbed in English where I'm all, these are some captivating storytelling. This is some captivating storytelling happening here. And why is this not, why have I not seen this until now? Again, it's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've certainly seen an influence in music and it's in starting in other places now of, you know, different cultures and different places and how those things are being consumed. And of course, but there are still unique cultural peculiarities. I mean, I put it that way, but there are things that are distinct about different cultures, you know, and for music in India is very different than the United States because the entire Bollywood and there's just a whole other culture that exists around it. So of course, that's a different, and these things can spread, but like if you grow up in that, in the entertainment environment, it's going to be different. So, you know, we look at this stuff through a lot of different lenses all the time. It was a big unlock for me when we started, when the team used to be just me, but now we have a trends manager for Korea. We have a trends expert, you know, in Japan and stuff. And when you unlock that and you start looking at it more globally, you can start to see a different picture of how a lot of these things evolved.
Oh my gosh. Like, was it like, I would love to know that, like, as we're wrapping up things here. And of course, we always leave time, Kevin, if there's like something that you want to touch on before close out. But, you know, let's talk about building a team. I mean, like you said, this is your baby. You started this thing off. Like, what are you looking for in terms of like, what's someone's DNA to get onto a team like yours?
There are now similar teams that exist at other platforms. So it used to be you could never find somebody who had the direct experience of doing the stuff that I was looking for. So we ended up hiring a lot of journalists, because I learned sort of quickly that I could teach someone to do data analysis more easily than I could teach like a data analyst understand culture. You know, like it's what the actual act of investigating and explaining stuff is the harder thing. Data analysis is also very hard, but you know, there's like a level that we could get by with on these things. And so, you know, a lot of times we're looking for smart people who are incredibly curious and professional in that curiosity, I suppose, and are excellent communicators, because they can explain. It's like, if you can find something really interesting, but you can't explain it to anyone, it really loses its value. So that's been a big part of the team that we've put together. And I'm very fortunate to work with just brilliant people who have such interesting perspectives on this from so many different places.
For sure. Because, you know, again, I'm obsessed with creators, obviously, in my role. And in order for the creators to be the most successful, we have to talk about the supporting roles that surround them. And like, you and your team are very much so breaking all of this down in such a vital way to ensure that the creator economy continues to expand, that, you know, that people can understand its evolution and like what's important and what is happening, how things are evolving. So again, I just think that it's so interesting to see that, you know, so many young people say that now creator is something that they aspire to be. I also want to leave room and space for people to understand like their career development around those who want to support creators and who love social.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that the world, the creator to creator economy, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the sort of supporting world of creativity that exists around this is has grown so much. It didn't really exist back in the day. And now, back in the day, I'm talking like 10 years ago, a lot of this stuff didn't really exist, you know? Yeah. But now there's so many interesting opportunities to, I mean, this is pop culture now. This is the entertainment landscape of the now and the future. And so if you're growing up right now and you're looking for an exciting job in entertainment, you're not like me, you know, being like, oh, I can't wait to get out to a writer's room in LA. You know, that's what I wanted to do. Like, you know, you're doing it yourself right now, or you're working with your friends, or you're getting into it in a lot of new different ways, you know?
For sure. Again, like, I think it's inspiring. It's exciting to see. And again, it just shows the depth and breadth of the work that's out there and like the importance that it is having on culture and that it will continue to have on culture, which is so, so important. So again, yeah. This has been, again, incredibly rich. But tell me, Kevin, is there anything that you've left on the dance floor that you want to explore? Because when I tell you, when I read your report, I was like, I could literally be on here talking to Kevin for 8 hours. But I want to know, like, what is there a section in there or something that you're particularly proud of or want to highlight?
I think we hit a lot of the stuff that I care about most. I think the thing that I would maybe leave you with here is that I've been at, you know, YouTube for 13 years now, watching video trends, tracking kind of this ecosystem for 13 years. And there's a question you ask yourself when you've done that for that long of, okay, is this enough? You know, like, is it time to have a different, you know, a different challenge in your life. And as someone who, as I self-professed earlier, you know, is fascinated by trying to understand why people like things and whatnot, I do think that this moment is one of the most, the next year or two could be one of the most interesting times to be in the creator world. It is a time when I think the thing that, and one of the main points that I make in my book, Videocracy, is that popular culture has become in more reflective of us, right? It is like the ways that we interact with popular culture have shaped it in a way that wasn't possible previously. So the popular culture of today is much more reflective of the human experience, I think, than it was previously. That's my argument, at least. But I'd say that like, because the technologies that will define entertainment 10 years from now are nascent today, and the way the norms that we create, the new innovations that we generate, these tech companies, YouTube included, are responding to the ways that creators are using them, right? That they're adapting to the way that the people who use our platform choose to use it, you know, and that will set the tone for good and bad. It will set the tone for what it can mean, what breakthrough popular culture looks like, you know, in the future. And I think that the creators right now are the ones that are going to define a lot of those norms and a lot of the opportunities that I think we have in the future. And I think that makes it an exciting moment.
For sure. I 100% agree. Like, we are, there is like a collision of so many different tensions that are happening right now of, you know, like this heavy reality that people are craving. They want to see themselves rather than something unattainable alongside all of this, all these technological advances. It is, again, I'm on the edge of my seat every single day to see, again, like, what's going to continue to break boundaries and what are people going to find irresistible every step of the way. So again, I'm hooked now, Kevin, on this report, and I cannot wait to continue to follow you and your team's journey. Like, this is so good. Thank you so much for all of this.
No, it was this is a blast. It was so good to hang out with you and talk about these topics that I'm so fascinated by. So yeah, this has been great.
For sure. All right. Well, that we're gonna leave it there, everyone.
Everything is Better with Creators is honored to be a part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network, and we are grateful for your support. If you enjoyed the show, hit that subscribe button, and if you have a moment, we'd appreciate a rating and review. To keep up with all things Whaler and the latest in the creator economy, visit us at whaler.com and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This is Ashley Rutter signing off for now. We'll catch you next time with another episode of Everything is Better with Creators, powered by Whaler. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.